Hello and welcome to Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Lapp and I'm delighted to be joined by the King of the Ring, Nick Davey.
Bow down to me.
Three-time wrestler in Norfolk, Oliver Newman.
Hello everyone. I'm very tired.
And Grapple Arcade, Mark Fox.
Hi up, how's it going?
I'm very well, thank you.
Classic.
So how are you doing this evening, lads?
A little bit of the bubbly.
Not bad, all right. Not so bad.
I'm very well. Looking
tired, but otherwise all right. Chris, how are you?
Good. I've just finished doing a quiz with Harry McKenney, Lance Rivera, and Cyrus Blackwell. So that will be released in a couple of weeks. That was quite fun.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's
the
BBG1 classic.
No.
So that was group one. That was group one, and then we've got three more wrestlers coming on in a couple of weeks, and then the group winners will meet in the final. Yeah, but it'll be released once I've recorded all three, so it'll come out consecutive weeks. So it should be fun.
Wonderful stuff. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, sounds like a wicked concept.
What's happened on Tour Tuckle this week, Mark?
Bits and bobs, mate. Yeah, bits and bobs. We've been tying up a few things, but one of the things that we're planning to do over the next couple of days is a wrestling figure customization competition, obviously. So one of our affiliates that you might have met him actually, Chris, for the love of wrestling. It was a guy who came over. He's in the middle of writing a Hasbro, like an encyclopedia of Hasbro wrestling figure stuff at the moment. Looking forward to that book coming out. But yeah. Myself and him have got a massive collection of old figures and old merchandise. We've both got between us a ton of battered figures that are no use to anybody really, or in collections, not really worth anything. So we're opening up to the Twitter collectors and the customizers of the world to all take part. We're going to send them all a figure each, up to 12. And they're all going to customize a knackered figure into something hopefully really good. We'll run a competition and then the people will get to vote on who the winner is. But those customizers will also be selling those figures on eBay, and all the money is going to be going to charity that we make off it. So we've got a lot of planning to do with that, but we're kind of getting there slowly but surely.
That sounds fun.
Fantastic.
bit of a different take on things, but yeah, it should be good, hopefully. It's a massive community, though, not just a collector's community, as we'll know, you know, wrestling figure fans, but the customizing, like people who basically pick up paintbrushes and change characters into different characters, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's some really, really talented people out there. And it's, yeah, hopefully we'll get some decent interest. There's a few people who said they are, so fingers crossed.
Oh, amazing.
There will be when it comes time to play the game.
Like that Warhammer figurine thing from back in the day.
Well, that's where I started doing it all, mate. And then I got into it quite a bit and then used to get... At one point, like the late 90s, early 2000s, I was getting wrestlers contacting me to make figures for them, which was quite trippy. Ones who weren't in WWE contract and things at the time wanted their own figures, and that was an interesting time period, to say the very least. But it's how a lot of people got into it, and the likes of the people who we've been interviewing recently, without giving too much away, talk a lot about how they got into the action figure design world, if you like, in the manufacturing world. So yeah, it should be good.
And speaking of interviews, you interviewed a WCW legend this week.
We just uploaded Kevin Sullivan, haven't we?
Yes,
indeed.
That's a really good interview. I listened to it today.
He's an interesting cat, like that's for sure. He's an interesting cat, but yeah, he's very open and honest, and he's. As me and Paul said afterwards, he's one of the most interesting guests we've got on, because some of the stuff he gets into is out there, and we speak a lot about stuff that you wouldn't expect to cover. Everything from obviously things like his time before he went to WCW, WWF, but everything to his hobbies and even to Britwrest he wanted to talk about.
He talked about British wrestling a lot. That's so interesting.
He did, yeah. And considering he's like, people need to remember he's 40 to 50 years. Every decade of those 4 to 5 decades, he's been an active wrestler in.
Yeah.
Like, he's been wrestling a long time. He was wrestling the last couple of years, man. Like, you know, he's still.
Yeah, wowie.
Yeah, I'm sure he had a quick spell in MLW recently.
He did, yeah. He did, yeah. He was at ROH a couple of years ago. He's done some stuff. Been about.
Well, basically, welcome to the second episode of the podcast in its new format. Today we have a fantastic quiz. So, yeah.
That's what you think. Yeah, it might be terrible. We'll see how it goes.
With Mark being
could
the question.
Fall completely on its ass, like Davey Boy Smith. We'll see how it goes.
We're still in a new era. We've still got some fresh opportunity, fresh matchups, new era. I love it.
It is, man. It's a new generation.
Are you going to introduce the wild card rule there, Nick? Or is that next week?
That's where he is down the line when we're trying to get ratings up.
If you haven't guessed, Mark is question master this week.
I might be.
Also we'll be discussing the highlights of Clash of Champions. We've got the BBG Big Quiz. No, BBG Big Debate. And then we'll give in our match recommendations in the Positive and Pro Wrestling segments. So we're going to skip news this week and go straight into round one of It's a Question of Sports Entertainment. So, Mark?
Lovely.
I feel like we need a theme tune for the quiz.
Yes.
Sing whatever you want. Sing whatever you want, because this theme, this quiz is all going to be about WWF, WWE theme music.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, we're obviously slightly hindered with not being able to play copyrighted music as part of the quiz. But worry not. I've carefully curated these questions, and after my emphatic win on the Twitter poll last week, when all I did was sing Steve Austin's theme music and he was voted shock horror the greatest champion of all time, it made sense to do a theme music. So without further ado, I think we'll get into round one.
Okay,
and round one's a sort of general-ish, well, they're all general knowledge. General music wrestling theme knowledge. So round one. Question one, gents. Question one. Kurt Angle's classic theme music is called Medal. It's the one you all know and love. He's had it for donkeys, yeah?
Yeah.
It was used, however, by two other WWF, WWE wrestlers.
Okay.
One of them was the Patriot.
Oh, fuck off.
But who was the other one? And you all know who it is. You all know the wrestler. It's not some obscure sort of 80s nonsensical thing. I'll give you a clue that this wrestler has been wrestling for probably exactly almost the same length of time that Kurt Angle has. So what I will say, I'm going to ask that question one more time. Apart from the Patriot, who was the other wrestler
okay.
who has used this theme tune?
Oh.
And it's not somebody who is part of a Kurt Angle tag team. Oh, well, so he's not. The answer is not going to be somebody who Kurt Angle would come out with and use Kurt Angle's music for. I'll give you that much, okay? It's a completely independent person.
Okay, I've said my mind. Okay, I've done my answer.
Yeah, I've set mine as well. No idea, but, you know.
It's fine, it's all right. I'll give Nick another couple of secs.
I don't know.
Nick wasn't born at this stage.
Oh, yeah. I've written down probably the most ridiculous answer. I reckon we're going to hear Mark laugh.
Right. Question two. Okay. Everybody's answered that. So I'll explain the answers at the end of this round, yeah? So question two. Which wrestler is credited as the first wrestler to use entrance theme music in the WWF, WWE on their way to the ring?
I'm never going to get it right, so I've just written down a wrestler.
I have no idea, so I just wrote down.
Dog. Question three. It's slightly in association to question two. However, which wrestler claims they were the first to use wrestling theme music in general?
Okay.
That was a guess.
Yeah, I've written all of mine are guesses so far.
Yeah, it's a hard round this one, lads.
There's only two more to go.
Last question of this round. In 2013, which WWE wrestler's theme tune reached number 44 in the UK charts?
Oh, what?
I know that one off by heart.
2013?
Yep.
Submitted.
Spells it wrong.
Gosh.
I'm so hard trying so hard not to sing it.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't do that.
Okay, I've done.
Time to play the game.
Pondering.
I don't know. Which wrestler?
Uh-huh. Yeah, which WWE wrestler in 2013 got to number 42 in UK charts?
Okay. I don't know.
Right, also be your answers. So that's round one over, lads. Sorry
Thank
about
God
that.
For that.
Sorry about the difficulty. Right. Would you like me to go through the answers and then tell you the scores?
Yeah.
This is round one. So, question one, Kurt Angle's classic theme music was called Metal. It was used by two other WWF, WWE wrestlers who aren't associated with Kurt Angle. One of which was the Patriot. The other of which, any guesses?
Mark Henry.
Mark Henry was the correct answer.
Yeah. You suck, Oliver.
Oh, I wrote it down Sean Stasi.
So
I got it when Nick said something. It just ticked it in my mind. But then I thought, yeah. I've gone with Shane McMahon because of the feud they had.
I'll be honest, when I was thinking of this question, I completely forgot about the Patriot. I remembered Mark Henry, but forgot about the Patriot. I was like, of course, yeah.
So I knew the Patriot.
Nick just said, huh, then. I thought it was a sneaky question, and it was, feud-based.
Well, one of those ones. And I reread the question because Nick didn't. I don't think he heard me at first.
I know. I've been down Johnny Hoss and Shelton Benjamin.
Which is a fair enough guess, unless you hear the question properly, yeah. Isn't it? Right, question two, lads. Which wrestler is credited as the first to use entrance theme music in the WWF WWE? The answer to that one is Sergeant Slaughter. Yeah, Sergeant Slaughter was the first person to pitch it to Vince. He liked the idea he went with it, and it was a massive hit when he was a face. So Sergeant Slaughter was the first person to use it in WWF WWE.
Anyone get that right?
Nope.
They didn't, nope.
I said Hogan.
Yeah, I
said Jesse the Body, I'm sure.
All three decent guesses, to be fair. Question three was, however, which wrestler claims that they were the first to use music in wrestling in general? Whether they were WWF or not, who was the person who said, I'm the one who should be credited for using theme music in wrestling?
Michael Hayes.
Michael Hayes is the correct answer.
Yay.
I wrote down Vince McMahon.
I said Jerry Lawler.
Yeah, that would have been a fair shout as well, actually. In fact, all of me, because Vince McMahon could easily have just turned around and said, no, it was my idea.
I remember watching
Eric Dollar was in Memphis, wasn't he? So
Hayes believes he was the first.
My thought process behind Vince.
I remember watching a documentary about the Von Erichs promotion, and apparently that got them over his heels because all the crowd hated that he had this rock music as his theme. It came to the roots of rock music or something.
Sergeant Slaughter was using a typical sort of pro-American, army-based anthem kind of thing, and obviously it was over as Rover, like, with the crowd. Yeah. Question for 2013, whose theme got to number 44 in the UK charts? Do you want to go for that one?
Fandango.
Fandango is correct. Fandango reached number 44. It was a massive kicking off. It was the Raw after Mania when everybody started doing it all, and then it took off big time. And UK, then somebody started using it as a football matches were taken off.
Everton took it on.
That's right. Crazy.
I said Bray Wyatt.
So
I'm tired.
So WWE responded by changing his theme music so it's just a generic Latin American dancey song.
Because
he's meant to be a heel, you can't like it.
So at the end of round one, scores on the doors, gents.
One.
Oliver is unfortunate to have missed out on the Mark Henry question, to be fair to him. So still a scratch at the moment, buddy, but there's still everything to play for in the next two rounds. Nick has got 1 point, and Chris is currently in the lead with 3 points out of four. Three. Jesus.
Wow.
Chris got three of them.
Oh, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Chris has got Wikipedia open.
I'm just old.
Nick, I'm going to tell the fabled story of the tortoise and the hare when it comes to my comeback.
Fair enough, mate. Hi, my name's Alan Kate, and you're listening to the Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast. Enjoy it, you scumbags.
Alright, so we'll do round two of the quiz after Positive and Pro Wrestling. Alright, so I reckon you should go to YouTube, search MLW Fusion episode 74, because it's 36 minutes in, and you can watch Alexander Hammerstone versus Go Shizuke. Goshi Ozaki.
I'm ready for you. He's usually me that butchers the Japanese names, but been in ROH. I know this guy. He's fantastic.
Yeah. There's an amazing match. Hammerstone's. If you don't know, Hammerstone is in a faction with MJF, and just in this match, you can see how much he's grown and improved as a singles wrestler. He's coming out of the shadow of MJF. It's a great match. Go watch it. It's in the N1 climax, the Noah's version of the G1.
Did it take place in Noah as well?
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay, then. So. Have you got a match from 1995?
I haven't. No, I'm not going to go that far back in time.
I think you got the most.
Oh, man, that was the best part of last week's show.
I think you had the most recent match, don't you?
This'll rank it. It's been a bit of a tricky one to sort of narrow down, but it's from a live event that took place this week and in Newcastle. And North Wrestling for North 20 had an absolutely stellar card on. It was cracking fun, loads and loads of fun. One match that stood out, well, there was two parts that stood out for me personally because of the people involved in it more than anything else. Nothing to take away from any of the other matches at all, because it was a really, really, really good card. It was stacked as well and cracking matches. However, there was because of the build-up, and if it's difficult for people who haven't, seen a build-up to something, especially with an independent company where they have, been a part of following what the build-up's been. But the match in question between Prime and our friend Shreddy Brett was a bit brutal, to say the least.
Looks
it was
painful.
A cracking encounter. Beast of a match.
The search for Prime videos in the lead-up were hilarious.
People need to go and check that out. Shreddy Brett running around different wooded areas of Newcastle looking for prime air in trees and bushes and things. It's great. And Shreddy's just a natural. He's a hilarious bloody bloke. Prime air's obviously been moving and shaking with NXT UK as well. So it was good for him to come back and go up against basically somebody who's bigger than him, which is not usually... Well, it depends who you ask. But to me, Shreddy is the biggest thing in the Northeast in terms of wrestling. I think the world is oyster, really. He just needs that opportunity, which he's getting with North and the likes in the Northeast. I don't want to give too much away about the match, because it's just a brutal encounter between two massive hosses. There's no other way to describe it. Just two big bastards smashing lumps out of each other, but very well.
Is it on his
two big bastards smashing lumps out of each other? That is a brilliant. That is a brilliant analysis of a wrestling match, Mark.
Well,
I applaud you. That's fantastic.
Two big lads.
If you go on his Twitter, there's either a picture of him taking pins out his back or a video of him taking pins.
There's a mini clip as well of where he gets slammed into the pins on the floor. I mean, don't get me wrong. We're accustomed to watching people take bumps and things like that, but when you see somebody like Shreddy, who's a monster of a man and shredded, as his name gives away, just a big, muscly British Bulldog version 2 sort of size dude.
Yeah, he's a professional bodybuilder as well, isn't he?
He's a big, ripple guy. Somebody like that taking bumps onto pins and things like that, it just has that extra element of, I don't know why, it just does.
Yeah.
he's all due respect to Mick Foley, but he's not of that kind of shape, if that makes sense. He's just, he's a bodybuilder who takes a lot of pride in his look and his aesthetical size. And great match between the two of them. Just wonderful. The added extra bonus of that event was that it was Benji's birthday.
Yeah.
Benji is a heel and he's got a Tory gimmick in North. And the wrestlers decided to give him the bumps for his birthday in the ring, which was fantastic. So yeah, happy birthday to Benji on that one. So that was fun. Anybody who's listening, if they can get onto North's
Pivot Share
Facebook page or Twitter page and get the Pivot Share link and go and check North's NCL 20 out. Cracking event. Loved every minute of it.
Fantastic. And over to yourself, Nick.
Gone for a generic match on a Monday Night Raw. Gone for Rey Mysterio against Gran Metalik. Not Lince Dorado, like I said off air. I thought it was it was a really good match. I was thinking as well earlier. I know it's been I've enjoyed Rey Mysterio, the storyline with Rey Mysterio this year with everything, and I'm quite enjoying this one soon where it's going to go with him announcing his retirement and his son talking him obviously out of it. And I quite like it. They're going to give him sort of good matches like this one against sort of if it's going to be against sort of lucha style wrestlers. I think it could be a quite a nice little storyline going. But no, for the match itself, just a very quite a nice high flight. It sort of reminded me of a sort of a classic cruiserweight match back in sort of SmackDown 2003 time. So I was just very impressed, and it was nice to sort of see Gran Metalik actually have a nice match, because obviously as face of the Lucha House Party, the way they've been binned over the last year, they've just been sort of nothing other than jobbers, losing to Lars Sullivan and what have you. So it was quite nice to see what they can do and sort of remind fans what they can sort of do, what Gran Metalik can do. So no, just a very nice match, and just quite intrigued to see where the Rey Mysterio storyline goes from here, really. So that's my match for this week.
Yeah, I said this to you, Nick, when we were talking about what's been the best feud of the year, and I said Rey Mysterio versus Andrade. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I completely agree with headlock author Mike Kingston on this. I think Rey Mysterio is, you know, under the radar, having one of the best years of his career.
Yeah.
And you've seen Raw. I mean, Mark, do you watch Raw?
I do when I can. I haven't. Feel free to go for it. I watch bits and pieces when I can.
It's only in terms of a match, but obviously
go for it,
haven't you? I'm not spoiling it for you, Nick.
I've seen up to this point, but the match with Cesaro, right?
Yeah, the match with Cesaro, which was incredible, and I believe that's going to be a strong contender for next week's show. But yeah, Mysterio is just he's ageless. You know, when he was working the indies in the UK, I had my doubts, in all honesty. But since he's come back to WWE, he's, you know, and I don't say this lightly, he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. He's been that good.
One thing that I've noticed with him as well, and it's been pointed out a few times, is that he looks really fit and healthy, if that makes sense. He's lost a lot of the excessive bulk that he put on
in terms of
muscle mass, and he's slender, and it makes sense, and he looks healthy, which is great to see.
No, it does. Sorry, Nick. No, I was just going to say, I think this year as well, I completely agree with what I said. He has sort of slid under the radar, especially if you look at the really dark times of post-Mania, when it was atrocious to watch the product, not Rey Mysterio, the product as a whole. His feud with Samoa Joe was actually one that sort of went under the radar and was actually quite watchable when the whole product wasn't at the stage. So I think he deserves a bit more credit. And as I say, it would be quite nice if they can keep putting out bangers of him on Raw, then. Yeah, again, I think it just gives a bit of credit to Paul Heyman as well for giving wrestlers like meaningful to do on Raw. And if we keep getting Mysterio classics, then I'm sort of all for it. It sort of reminds me a bit of Angle, the build up Angle had to Mania, where he kept getting sort of matches on Raw. Obviously, they weren't the best, but with Mysterio's, and no disrespect to Kurt Angle, Mysterio's in a lot better shape. So you'd like to think we can still get some very good matches out of Rey Mysterio if that's what they're sort of heading towards, albeit long term, which is always a good thing.
And for me, I like to round this off to five matches in Positive and Pro Wrestling. Obviously, you guys have done three. The first match for me is Ace Austin versus Eddie Edwards from last week's Impact Wrestling. I don't know if you guys have been watching Impact, but basically, this feud is over the fact that Ace Austin wants to bang Eddie Edwards' wife, and I'm using their terms. That's not what I'm thinking. And basically, he's like a very sleazy guy, and he's kind of working the angle like Sami Callihan did with Eddie Edwards from last year. Eddie's crazy, and you know, he hit his wife with a kendo stick and stuff, and Ace Austin's kind of playing the friend to her, but the arsehole to him. And the match was really, really good. And just the storyline in general is just it's just fascinating to watch, you know, honestly. The only thing I could say is on commentary, they said, oh, well, Alicia Edwards is watching this backstage. Well, how does she not know what Ace Austin wants to do to her? If I'm picking faults, well, the match itself was really, really good. And my other positive in pro wrestling match is the Four Horsewomen tag match from Raw at Madison Square Garden. I said this on our social medias. This should have been the main event of the show. They wrestled like it was the main event of the show. You know, it went to the first break and the fans are chanting, this is awesome. And it went through the break and went on for another, I think, 10 to 15 minutes. And it was just brilliant.
This is the leader of the rejected Demon Eye. You are listening to Broken But Glorious.
As there are recommendations for this week, so it's time for round two of a question of sports entertainment. Mark?
It is, and it's, it doesn't get any easier, lads, in this one. It's a kind of a, so it's going to be a bit more of a guessy one again, but it's purposefully a guessy one this time. So you'll see what I mean. Round two. So WWE, WWF have released numerous theme tune compilation albums over the years. I'm going to tell you the name of the album and a couple of tracks from the album, i.e. the wrestlers' names.
Uh-huh.
What I need you to do is tell me the year that it was released in the USA.
Oh,
okay. What I will do is give you one clue straight off the bat that it's going to be in order. So the first one I tell you is going to be the earliest.
Okay.
And then we'll be working our way to modern day, if you like, in that kind of in that pattern, in that trajectory. So again, though, if you send me the messages with your answers on,
yeah,
and I just need you to just send me a year. Okay. Right. So album number one is WWF The Music Volume 3. And on that featured The Undertaker and X-Pac. So that's all you're getting. WWF The Music Volume 3, and the album had on it theme tune for The Undertaker and X-Pac. Tell me your answers, please.
Okay.
Okay, done.
Yep.
Okay. Yep, done. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck.
Okay.
I got that one wrong, I've just realised.
Yeah, I've got a feeling I might have gone a bit too soon. Oh, well.
Okay. Okay. Album number two is WWF The Music Volume 5, which featured China and Taz.
Fuck sake. Edit that out, Chris.
we've got to edit out the fact that two, you know, bastards. We've got to edit that part. Well, we're going to edit this part and both me and Mark saying it earlier. So I wouldn't worry about swearing, lads. as long as you say it in America.
Yeah.
Any word you can't say is.
Beautiful. Right. Thank you, chaps.
Yes, submitted.
The next album on the list is WWF Reckless Intent. And that featured Mark Henry and RVD. Thinker, that one, isn't it? Thinker.
Was it Mark Henry's medal song?
If it was, it means I've completely gone against my rules and gone back in time if that was the case. But no,
I knew that
wasn't.
Time machine would come in handy.
Is everybody done?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just see lists of dates in front of me, so it's right. Question for last one. WWE The Music Volume 10. It featured Jerry Shaw and Bret Hart.
Jerry Shaw.
I'm really annoyed. I've probably got all these dates just like a year or so out.
Jerry Shaw, Jericho, and Big Show.
Jerry Shaw.
Jerry Shaw.
What a diabolical time that was to be a WWE fan.
Yep, all done.
Right, submitted.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you very much. Okay.
For the bonus
question. Bonus question, chaps. And this bonus question is worth 2 points.
Oh.
Yeah. Out of the albums I've told you there, based on the dates that you believe that they were, okay? So based on those four albums, so Volume 3, Volume 5, Reckless Intent, and Volume 10, one of those got to number 2 in the US billboards. Which one was it? Send me your answer. I just put Volume 3, Volume 5, Reckless Intent, or Volume 10 as your answer.
Okay.
Done.
Okay, all done.
All done.
WWF Music Volume 3 was 1998.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Volume 5, 2001.
Yeah, I wrote that for number 1, annoyingly.
Oh, bugger. No. I was there, boy, a year.
1 year, I was.
So I knew, yeah, I've copped this up. No, it's not. I'm going to be like a year. Yeah.
How's your debuted in 2000, you schmuck?
Yes, I put 2000.
Well,
as we mentioned, Taz, can we just play SmackDown?
I know, you're putting me in the Taz mission. I loved you on WBF No Mercy, so, you know.
Taz, when he used to commentate on Taz matches on SmackDown, just bring it.
It's amazing.
You and my guy on No Mercy, Taz, so, you know, I didn't mean that in an offensive way.
Taz was great the other day.
We randomly, very, very quickly, spoke about Taz actually on the interview last with Kevin Sullivan on the intro part, because when Kevin Sullivan went to ECW for that random few months, he became the ECW tag team champion with Taz, Tazmaniac, before he became Taz that you know of him today.
Yeah.
When he used to have his Carlton Palmer haircut.
Get Taz on the show.
Right, WWF Reckless Intent. 2006.
Oof.
Oh,
no. Hey.
Yeah, 2006, man.
I'm having trouble with that one.
Yeah. And Volume 10 was 2010.
Yay!
Yes!
I got one right.
The bonus question as to which one became the top hitter, and you know, the I think it was possibly the best album that WWE's ever launched in terms of the Billboard placing, got to number 2 in their charts.
Oh no!
It was
Reckless Intent.
It was Volume 5.
Yes.
Oh no! That's what I meant to. Oh,
come on!
That's the one. That had.
That's what I meant to write. I actually did meant to write that down. No, cause,
Volume 5. That. And Volume 5 was released in 2001, and it's the song that had The Rock's song about
it
was pie.
The Rock on the front. The Rock on the front.
Yeah. And he had a song about pie that had nothing to do with a wrestling theme tune, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I know.
So that got to number.
Does that Chris won it?
Well. Believe it or not, it's a bit of a nightmare, that one, for everybody else. It wasn't actually a nightmare for anybody. It was a close call. And you were all very, really unlucky with a couple of your answers there. And I knew that was going to be a bugger for you, so sorry about that.
No,
Nick came away with 1 point from that one. Oliver came away with 2 points from that one. Chris would have come away from 1 point with that, but he got the bonus right for two. So he came away with 3 overall in that round.
Hey. Right, so before we discuss Clash of Champions, I just want to say that we're pleased to that we have a partnership with Wrestling Resurgence, a great promotion coming out of Leicester. The next show, Roy Johnson's Everything's Patterned, is on Saturday, 12th of October, which will see the first ever Resurgence British Rounds match between Roy Johnson himself versus one of the 2019's breakout stars, the OJMO. And to get 15% off...
OJMO.
And to get 15% off... Wrestling Resurgence merchandise and tickets for upcoming shows, please use our code BROKEN15. The link will be in the link to the store will be in the description below this podcast. It's Clash of Champions. I thought it was a bit meh. I think the show will be remembered for the Fiend attacking Rollins and return of Luke Harper. So should we start with WWE Universal Champion Seth Rollins retained against Braun Strowman in what I thought was a very Heyman-esque main event? So big moves, big spots. he booked it very similar to Rollins versus Brock matches, I thought.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yes!
it was very similar to, I thought, like, SummerSlam, because SummerSlam, I thought, was very meh until it, towards the end, with The Fiend and then Seth Brock at the end. This, I thought, saved the show, because I thought it was a really good match. First of all, I thought it was a really good match between Seth and Braun. Some great spots throughout, some spots that looked pretty painful. As I say, I think with the Seth doing the pedigree and the stomp, all brilliant. But yeah, the real talking point was just at the absolute end, with when you think it's all over, with even the little logo that appears at the bottom of the screen, you think
they pulled an NXT and did something after the copyright logo.
Yeah, because it was when Tommaso attacked Johnny Gargano. That's exactly what I thought as well. And when it happened, it's just the noise as well. Like, it's not even like the old Bray Wyatt noises where you would like hear the that sort of just the noises or anything. It was just that sudden with the lights going off. I sort of just cheered, even though I'm watching it on, obviously not even in the live audience, but I cheered watching it at home. It was just a fantastic. Fantastic booking by WWE, and then it was just done perfection. It is just scary, isn't it? I mean, we're grown men, and I'm sure it's still got, you're still looking at it and go, get the shaky sort of feelings you do when you're watching like a horror movie. But it was booked to perfection, I thought, the post match, the main event. And whilst, as I say, the show wasn't great, the takeaways going from the show are fantastic, in my opinion, when you take away takeaways. And that's kind of what you need on a pay per view here and there, despite with the matches not being of the standard. But yeah, I thought the main event was great. And then the post match was just superb, I thought.
I think we'll agree with that.
Sorry, one second, Mark. Okay, Mark, let me just, because I'll forget my point because of his tiredness and stuff.
No, go for it.
Nick, if you think that, obviously he said that was freaky and stuff. All the stuff with the Firefly Funhouse, and The Fiend on Raw.
I'm only a couple of hours in, so I'll just stop.
What, you said you watched it?
Not watched it all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, whatever. Back to you, Mark. Chris.
Well, sorry, I think, and what I completely agree with you there, Nick. There's one thing that was arguably just as scary, and that was Braun Strowman trying to perform a top rope splash. That was mind-boggling. That was a sight, and I think everybody was clenching during that one.
He didn't look very steady on the top rope.
And the fact that it was just a near fall as well, and I thought that was the only downfall of that match, the fact that that was a near fall, like, following that. So, but yeah, it was, as everybody said, it wasn't a great pay-per-view, as we said before. I felt it was very much one of those kind of pay-per-views that the results set up for the future rather than highlighting what the main show was about.
It was setting up Hell in the Cell, I think.
Yeah, and you need these now and again. We have to have these, and I'd rather it be on a show like this rather than one of the main ones, even though this should be one of the main shows given what's at stake every single match. It still feels like a B-show, which is strange.
Yeah,
this particular event should be on par with WrestleMania, really, when you think about it. Every single championship is on the line. If there's nothing more prestigious than that, then what's the point? But it still feels like a big show. Like, it doesn't hit you like one of the main four. So and this outing, if you like, kind of proved that point.
See, for me, if obviously you're saying about it should have been more prestigious and stuff, Mark. If this was a WCW pay-per-view, it would have been.
I agree.
That's where they got it from.
They were, exactly. It's just that it's one of them.
In terms of this, if the B shows kind of get us to the big four, then I'm okay with it, in all honesty.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Because the big four need to be prestigious. They need to really hit home, and they haven't sometimes because of the so-called B shows. In terms of the match, I'll keep it short and concise. I didn't watch it. just for me, like 4.5 hours of wrestling You know, I was travelling to see my dad on Monday, and I had the opportunity to watch it, but my data was kind of really high. So I watched the ending, and the big splash by Strowman was superb. But then I saw, you know, Rollins stomped Strowman three times, pedigree, and I'm just not into that New Japan kind of, and obviously, and like WWF, Austin Rock, five finishes until I put you down, because it just makes your finish you look like crap. In all honesty, I think, you know, one finisher and a super finisher should be the end of the match. More than that, it just dilutes the finisher for me.
I think against somebody like Strowman, based on the fact that he's a gigantic monster, I can let that slide a bit, but it happens so much in just general matches that it's happened against Brock Lesnar.
You know what I mean? I can understand that. You know, this is a beast slayer, and this is a monster and stuff.
You have to go the extra mile to take him out, but when it's happening in not as bigger matches, if you like, against the same kind of
trying to keep it short and concise. If you did a finisher and a super finisher, that should be enough to take out anyone. If Rollins did a normal stomp and then did a springboard stomp and put Strowman down, then you'd agree with it.
Pandora's box is open now, though, isn't it? That's the only thing.
Yeah, I just don't. It made Strowman look really good in terms of, you know, in terms of how strong he looked. I'm not going to take that away. That was obviously really good. But he's just the nearly man. This is a guy that has everything. I mean, he did a top rope splash. He wrestled the Big Show like he was playing WCW versus NWO Revenge, and he can't win Universal title, and it's just shocking. You had Hell in a Cell last year. You didn't do it. You could have pulled the trigger. You could have pulled the trigger on Sunday, and then he could have gone against the Fiend because of their Wyatt family connection at Hell in a Cell, no problem. And I just think he's going to be the nearly man, but he's a guy that could build the company around. I really, really have a lot of time for Strowman, obviously. I didn't watch the match because I knew the result. And then, obviously, from the prediction standpoint, which I showed you guys, I'm terrible at predictions. I got a clean sweep on this show. So,
I do agree what you're saying about Braun Strowman becoming sort of the nearly man. But I don't think you can argue of Seth winning.
It's like Samoa Joe, Nick.
I think it would have been an absolute disaster, though, if it was Strowman versus Wyatt or the Fiend at Hell in a Cell. I just don't think the feud's ready for that. I just think with Seth, I think it's just kind of logical booking. Seth's beaten the Beast, he's now beaten the Monster. If he then goes and loses to the Fiend, not only it just makes perfect sense, it then makes the Fiend look that extra bit more stronger, that he's done what the Monster and the Beast can't do. And I just think it's. I do get what you're saying about Strowman, that they can't run down the route now. Like, obviously, having absolute naffle to do with him. Mate, obviously, you've got a draft coming up, so he could be one that could do a bit of a fresh up.
I was looking from Strowman's perspective, Nick, as opposed to Rollins and the Fiend. I completely agree with you. It is the best route to go down. Beast Slayer, Monster Slayer, loses to the Fiend, and you're going to jump through the ceiling. When it happens, and we're all going to rejoice because it is the right thing to do, and it'd be amazing. If they screw that up, then questions will be asked.
It's just done, isn't it, really?
But I think with Strowman, it will be interesting to see where he goes from here. But I think WWE, they've always been, I think, very, very solid with Strowman's booking, in my opinion. I know, yes, it would be nice if he could get a belt under it, but I mean, you look at the chances where he hasn't won. If I'm right in saying, Hell in a Cell last year was Lesnar interference, then obviously his match against Lesnar for the title, when obviously Reigns sadly had to vacate the belt, it was Baron Corbin shenanigans. So there's always been a bit of shenanigans. That was his first proper actual clean loss, I believe.
He's been protected, and like I said, he looks strong, but for me. Yeah, I guess it isn't his time now, but hopefully he's a multi-time champion before he retires, because he's got a hell of an upside.
I'll tell you what, I'll quickly round off this little chat with these guys just by quickly saying that I like the fact that there's a little fantasy booking kind of a carrot being dangled here with the fact that Bray Wyatt came out and Braun Strowman wasn't the one that he attacked, we'll put it that way. could there be some kind of unity going forward based on what Bray's up to at the moment with things? Braun needs something, why not?
No,
why
not?
If Strowman turns in the Firefly Funhouse, I think Nick will lose his mind.
No, you just know. No.
Only puppets can go in the fans.
Anyway, yeah, we can go forever with this one.
do you feel it's a bit early for a title feud with Wyatt?
No, I think the way he's been built up since WrestleMania, isn't it? Nick had his reservations about them doing this straight away. For me, it's the next logical thing. And I'd just like to say, regarding last week and stuff, I know, obviously, the 10-man tag, but the Fiend should have attacked Steve Austin in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, they say that was a missed opportunity, but I do agree with what Michael Hamlet actually said on the What Culture podcast, not to plug another podcast. No, he made a very good point. We'll praise it, credit where credit's due, of striking while the iron's hot, because I think he mentioned, we've said it on this podcast, Oliver's just quoted me, we've said it's best not to push it too early. I think now after seeing out on Sunday, there won't be a single wrestling fan that says, oh no, they have to delay it a bit more. Definitely strike while the iron's hot. They've never really done it, have they? So I think now they've
been... But you've been waiting for Wyatt to be the man for years, Nick.
Well, I have, but I lost all faith until that the night after WrestleMania where that little puppet appeared on the backstage segment. But no, it's strike while the iron's hot. Why not? It's the best thing in wrestling at the moment. It's obviously a very exciting period to come up in the whole of wrestling with NXT, AEW and what have you. This is just great. Definitely strike while the iron's hot, and you can just have so much good stuff as well, can't you? You can actually have almost logic of people scared to face for the belt. Like, you can even have the logic of someone wins the Royal Rumble and they're like, oh, actually, I'm not so sure, actually, I want to go through this match sort of thing. I mean, there's so many outcomes. You could have Brock Lesnar, like, almost like, yeah, I'm not scared sort of thing. I could beat him, and then there's all the doubts fitting into everyone's mind. There's just loads of outcomes you could go with Bray Wyatt, who he could face. Like, you could have even wrestlers who are shown, almost like someone like Aleister Black, who says he will take on all comers and everything. There's just loads of wrestlers and there's loads of feuds and everything that you can get into with this, and almost kind of have the belt not hostage as such, but you could have it locked in the Firefly Funhouse sort of thing. And I'm not saying no one has to turn up there. I'm not saying that at all, but you get what I'm saying, that you have it
there. More house so far as
no, not that at all. But you just
start again.
The booking's been great so far, and I'm excited, really excited with this. And I haven't said this for a while with WWE, but I'm generally excited to see the whole complexion of the Universal title, because the belt itself, there's not really been too many reigns where I've really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed where the next feud's going to go. This is just one where I really generally am so excited to see what's happening next, and the match itself at Hell in a Cell.
See, the Fiend and Bray Wyatt, that's the only thing that's on par in wrestling to that for me is the rise of Tessa Blanchard. But I'm really into Impact Wrestling, so I don't know if you guys would know that, but it's been fantastic as well. But yeah, Bray Wyatt wins the Universal title at Hell in a Cell, and the world.
Say, I do applaud WWE striking where the iron is hot for once, but I feel there's one match too early, because they've been telling the story of the Fiend destroying legends like Foley and Angle, so I think they should have had him face a champion of the legends before moving on to the title.
See, nah, it's not for me. Keep taking out the legends and then fight somebody on the main roster. I mean, that's perfect.
It doesn't have to be a legend, but somebody who's going to be the legends champion.
I get that, but I just think it's been done so well, the booking and everything so far. I don't know if I'm trying to run the same sort of thing. Don't replace it when it's not broken. Is that what I'm looking for? I don't know. I just think it's just so good. There's any tweaks could damage it, sort of thing. So I think it's been so good, just enjoy it would be my advice, I guess, really, because we still know it's gonna get, they're gonna cock it up further on down the line to add a negative spin onto it.
Look at it this way: he's the hottest thing in WWE. So what do you want the hottest thing in WWE to do? Go for the title, win the title. Tessa Blanchard's the hottest thing in Impact Wrestling. What do you want her to do? Go for the title, win the title. I don't know what they're going to do, but WWE, that's what they need to do. Simple as.
Do you see the return of Luke Harper feeding into Eva's storyline?
I hope not. No. Keep that completely separate. As much as it's brilliant to see Luke Harper back, and as well as brought that on the subject back, that was a genuine surprise as well, because I don't know about you guys, but I presumed it was Ryan
there. That was great. Great camera work.
It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It was a general shock. I was like, oh, hang on. Stop. When did Rowan get hurt?
On Twitter did a fantastic fantasy booking storyline. I'll just run it by you really quickly. Harper returns. So Rowan wins. Rowan and Harper take down Reigns. Brian comes out and protects Reigns. Then at Hell in the Cell, it's Brian and Reigns against Harper and Rowan. And then Brian is finally revealed as the mastermind. Think corporate ministry Vince. Those three take on Reigns with two partners at Survivor Series. And then after that, you finally get the one-on-one match between Reigns and Brian.
I think that's 100% what they're going for, isn't it? I think whether how long they stretch. It's sort of weird booking. It sort of feels a bit, as much as I've loved it, I actually really have enjoyed it, because it's so crazy, the booking of this. I still want to know who's that Eric Rowan's dad. Is he still involved in it? Is he still involved somehow in this? When that SmackDown segment, he was revealed, and they all just stared at each other as it's SmackDown. I think that's probably what's going to happen, isn't it? It will be, I reckon, Brian and Reigns versus Rowan and Harper at Hell in a Cell. And then, I think we will eventually to Brian Reigns. It will be Brian that's revealed it all. Whether they'll stretch it out as far as Mania, I don't know. Or whether they'll stretch it out as close as, well, not even stretch it out, whether they'll go as soon as Survivor Series. But I think that is what's going to happen. But I'm all for that. I think it's a nice little twist, because I never saw Harper turning up, especially as I thought him and WWE were on complete wrong terms, and I thought it was just ticking off the calendar days until he's free to join AEW.
Yeah, definitely.
They did well to keep that off the cards, didn't they? They did well to keep that a secret. Because I don't think it was leaked anywhere either, that I could tell.
No.
See, the thing is, in this situation, though, they weren't going to let Harper leave until he finishes the days that he's been injured. And just quickly, I just wanted to say something, because not many positive things get said about him. The booking of Roman Reigns this year, since he's come back from leukemia, has been fantastic.
Yep.
In terms of just keeping him under the radar, away from people booing him and stuff, and just letting him tick along on the card.
Keep him warm, don't force him, which is...
It's what's needed to be done since the beginning, isn't it? But, they're finally ticked onto it. So, Roman Reigns booking this year has been really good.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
This is the Emperor Drake Winter, and you are listening to Broken But Glorious.
Right, so it's time for the final round of Question of Sports Entertainment. Mark, do you want to remind the listeners of the scores so far?
Scores on the door so far. We have got... Nick has got 2 points. Oliver has got 2 points. And Chris has got 6 points. However...
next week.
However, round three... there's points galore. There's everything to play for. All right, and it's going to be complete guesswork as well. And no matter what, you're going to be coming away with points in this round. So it's going to be one of those guys. All right. So what I've sent you all is an image of 12 different wrestlers' names.
Yeah.
And this is why I've done that. The website Ranker lists the best wrestling themes voted for by fans of all time. Okay. I know a lot of websites do this, but I've gone with Ranker because it's a reputable ranking website. So it lists the best wrestling themes voted for by fans, I've told you the top 12 in no particular order. You all have three guesses, and I want you to tell me who you think, three different wrestlers, are likely to be at the top of that list, if that makes sense. So what I've done is, I've given them all a score from 1 to 12.
Okay.
The person who has got the most votes of all time, who is at the top of Ranker's list, gets 12 points, for example, okay? Your aim is to get as many points as you can by listing three wrestlers from the list I've sent you. At the end, I will tell you where they ranked in that top 12 and what points are associated next to them.
Sweet.
So there's literally everything to play for here because, you know, one guess alone could get you 12 points. See what I mean?
Done.
Wow, right. There's a lot of... This is a really interesting where we've gone here. Okay. So, what I'm going to do now, I've received your three names from each of you. I'm, in no particular order, it doesn't make any sort of differences. I'm going to ask you guys to sort of... I'm going to read the names out on the list so the listeners know who we've been looking at. And then I'm going to ask you guys to name me your three, your top three. And I'm going to tell you what the points are and who the top of the ranker is, if that makes any sense. Okay. So, the names that I sent you guys were Macho Man, Daniel Bryan, Kurt Angle, DDP, Million Dollar Man, Chris Jericho, Trish Stratus, Rey Mysterio, Edge, Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Booker T. Nick, do you want to name the three that you went for?
Yep. What a great 12-man tag match that would be, by the way.
What did you?
I've gone for Macho Man, Triple H, and Edge. That's in no particular order.
Macho Man, Triple H, and Edge. Chris, do you want to name your three, please?
I went for Stone Cold, Edge, and Y2J.
Right. And Oliver, do you want to name your three, please?
Stone Cold, Jericho, Macho Man.
Thank you very much.
All very similar.
So, I'm going to now read out the top 12, starting at number 12. Number 12 is worth 1 point, okay? Mm-hmm. Number 11 is worth 2 points. So whoever's at the top of the chart is worth the full 12 points. I'm going to be adding all three of them together, all three of your scores together, to come up with a total massive score for each of you at the end of that round, okay?
I've got a bit of paper, so I'll be doing the same.
That's absolutely fine, mate. It's absolutely fine. So,
argue case.
In 12th place, with 1 point, Booker T. In 11th place, with 2 points, Triple H. 10th place, with 3 points, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Wow.
No way.
9th place, with 4 points, is Edge.
No. Oh, what?
8th place, with 5 points, is Chris Jericho.
What? They'll be in top three.
Wow.
7th place, with 6 points, is Kurt Angle. 6th place, with 7 points, Rey Mysterio. 5th place, with 8 points, Trish Stratus. 4th place, with 9 points, Daniel Bryan. Third place with 10 points is Million Dollar Man. Second place with 11 points is DDP.
Oh, nice.
And first place with 12 points is Macho Man Randy Savage.
The greatest feature of all time.
So.
He gets ridiculed for his feature.
So scores tally together. Nick has got a total overall score of 20 points. Oliver has got an overall score of 22 points.
Oh, man.
And Chris has got an overall score 18.
How do I feel
18
last?
Points.
Oliver wins.
Oliver wins. So, in one round.
Oliver's the hair, lad.
Oliver's quizmaster next week.
That was that shook things up a bit, that one. But, yeah. Some interesting results there, though. That's in terms of the ranker,
yes.
Listings. Some of those I was like, no way. So yeah, this is there voted on by a lot of fans, and obviously rankers, they do ranking lists for so many different sort of lists, if you can imagine, throughout the world of anything in particular. So a lot of people do take part in this, and overall, I mean, just the randomness. DDP getting a second, that's a great shout. That I would never have even thought of that as a top
Nirvana.
Five. And what a tune it is, that knock off Nirvana song, you know.
So before we do the BBG big debate, we have a partnership with powerslam.tv, where you can get a month's free access to over 145 promotions in 20 countries, contributing to over 6,000 hours of content with podcast favourites, Riptide, North Wrestling, as well as Progress, Evolve, Shine, and dozens of others by using the promo code BROKEN3. So the results from last week. So in last place, The Rock, Nick's choice, with 14%. Third was CM Punk, Oliver's choice, 24%. Second was me, Hulk Hogan, 26%. So the winner last week was Steve Austin, Mark, 35%. So congratulations to Mark.
Thank you very much, chaps. Much appreciated.
Mark.
You get to pick what we're debating this week. So what were you debating?
That singing was sublime.
well, yeah, it led nicely into the quiz, didn't it? You know, this week. So I tied it together as much as I could. But this week, chaps, we're going to be carrying on in similar vein, but we're going to be debating the greatest intercontinental champion of all time.
All right, so we've each picked one champion, and we've got 1 minute each to argue our pick.
I'll go first. The winner stays on. Winner goes first. Get this one out of the way. Right, tell me when to go.
3, 2, 1, go.
And that's why he's absolutely perfect. Mr. Perfect is my option for this, the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. It was a sublime hand in 89, where he had a massive undefeated streak, actually from 1988 until 1990. And in May of 1990, he won the Intercontinental Championship at the end of the tournament after Warrior dropped it and vacated it. From there, we found, in my opinion, the Mr. Perfect that we all knew and loved when Bobby Heenan took him on under his wing as part of the Heenan family. I mean, you can't really get much more of a parent than Bobby Heenan and Mr. Perfect. When I think of the Intercontinental title, I think of it around Mr. Perfect's waist, managed by Bobby the Brain Heenan, walking out to the ring, spitting his chewing gum in the air, throwing the towel up behind him, Bobby the Brain Heenan catching it. I just don't think it's possible to get a better Intercontinental Champion, let alone his incredible matches. I'm going to mention one match.
Fine.
Only.
Fine. Fine. Sorry, Mark.
It's all good. Well, no, that's all I needed.
That's all you needed, to be fair. You didn't even have to mention the matches.
Indeed.
Who's next?
I'll go next. So, Macho Man Randy Savage may have only held the Intercontinental Championship once, but simply the greatest IC title reign of all time. So, fans loved to cheer the baby face Macho Man, but it was in classic heel fashion. He won it by going into his tights and drilling Tito Santana with a foreign object, and then he would hold the title for 114 days, defeating some of the most beloved baby faces such as Bruno Sammartino, Roddy Piper, Jake Roberts, and he will go down the most respected match in WrestleMania history, WrestleMania 3, where he went against Ricky Steamboat. Yeah, I'm
done.
Right, okay. Count me in.
3, 2, 1, go.
A little bit of bubbly. That's right. I'm going for Chris Jericho as the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. Based on, you have to look at every single feud he's had with that belt. It's always been watchable. It's always been absolutely fantastic. And arguably, it's even been better than what the feuds that are going on at the top of the top of the cards. That match against Chris Benoit at the Royal Rumble 2001, the ladder match. The less said about the headshots, the better. But what a match, one of the best ladder matches of all time. His feuds in 2003 on Raw against wrestlers like RVD and Booker T were all great. His feud in 2009 against Rey Mysterio with the mask, absolutely superb, as were the matches. All fantastic. And just it's Chris Jericho. He can do it as a face, he can do it as a heel. He's still going strong at this age. He's just fantastic. If you want to, if you ever get bored on the WWE Network, go back and watch all of Chris Jericho's Intercontinental matches, and you can also check out his fantastic gimmicks as well, because he's had about half a
time.
2, 1, off you go.
Okay, so for me, it's Bret the Hitman Hart, my favourite wrestler growing up. The aforementioned match that Mark couldn't say, Perfect Heart, Madison Square Garden, taps out to the sharpshooter. To give respect to Perfect, he had a severely damaged lower back and still went out there and gave the performance of a lifetime, as did Brett. SummerSlam 92, main event, British Bulldog, I'm fooked, Brett, took him to the match of his life. Jeez, the men with WrestleMania 8 against Rowdy Roddy Piper. It's been said forever that Rowdy Roddy Piper was fantastic, but in terms of matches, I'm not sure about the match quality. But when he got in there with the best there is, the best there was, and the best there will be, it was damn near the best match on WrestleMania 8.
Time!
Oh, that was perfectly done, that, mate. Yeah. Round of applause for your time in there.
All right, so Wednesday lunchtime, we'll put a poll up on Twitter, BBGW Pod, and yeah, the winner will pick next week's topic. So we'll finish there. Got plenty of interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks. This Friday, look out for our interview with referee James Greenwood and Mags and Paul from the Badlands podcast. I appeared on the Badlands podcast and the Why We Watch podcast last week. I think they're both coming out this week, so look out for them. Oliver, do you want to quickly do your books?
Just quickly before that, it was an honour and a privilege to interview Mr. Impact Wrestling, leader of the Moose Nation, Moose. Apologies for the echo in the background. That couldn't be helped. But I hope you enjoyed the interview, and thanks very much for Simon for setting it up, and Moose for allowing me to interview him. In terms of my books, I've done a British wrestling book looking at the time period of 2001 to 2007. In depth on 2007. It's called The Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. I've done a WWE book, which is based on the 2016, and that covers Raw, SmackDown Live, NXT TakeOvers, house shows, and the Cruiserweight Classic in 2016. It was a great year. Hopefully you'll read the book and you'll know why. And then my last book is based on 2008, beginning of 2009. I went to WrestleMania 24. You see the before, during, and aftermath of that. I met my childhood hero, the man who I've just debated, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be, Bret the Hitman Hart. I am a huge fan of Paul London, for everyone who knows me. WWE could have booked him to the main event. They didn't, so I fancy booked him there. A look at women's wrestling, looking at the feud between Gail Kim and Awesome Kong, which lit up women's wrestling and pro wrestling in 2008. And a look at different matches that have been lauded in 2008 as well, if you're interested in that. And they are all available signed on a fan's perspective.bigcartel.com for half the price of Amazon. If you don't want to go on Big Cartel, go for your local Amazon. You're just going to be paying double the price. Available on paperback and Kindle. And if you have Kindle Unlimited, they're available for free. And I get paid per page as you read in the first sitting.
Okay, so if you enjoy our show, please check us out on Twitter. It's BBGWPod. And our hub, it's BBG Wrestling. And we'll be launching a website soon, bbgwrestling.com. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay. Good night.